Welcome to Sense and Sustainability, your podcast channel for sustainable procurement. We hope you like what you hear. Please go to www.iso2400.org for more information, learning resources, tools, and much more.
So, hello, everybody. Welcome to Sense and Sustainability. I'm Sean McCarthy, Director of Action and Sustainability. I'm delighted to welcome Shaz Khan from the USA today to talk about supply chains, ESG, and technology, and all of those things. So, Shaz, would you like to just introduce yourself and talk a little about your business and what it does?
Thank you, and delighted to be here, Sean. My name is Shaz Khan. I'm the Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Roozy. And we are a procure-to-pay platform based in the United States, designed to optimize how companies purchase products and services to power their business, as well as optimize how they pay their suppliers.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Shaz. And when we had a conversation earlier, you talked about how the world is changing from your point of view and how the demands for ESG, sustainability, net zero carbon, call it what you will. What are your customers starting to ask for now, and how are things different for you?
I think it's really fascinating, the acceleration of ESG, CSG, sustainability initiatives within the companies that we are actually interacting with. And we see it in two ways. Obviously, consumer sentiment drives a lot of the prognostications of what happens in business. And so when you see consumers largely under 40 years old driving more purchases, if you will, in the sustainability category, whether it's recycled fibers in terms of organic cotton or sustainable products in the food and beverage space, we're now seeing that element seep into our customers, where the customers are actually asking for, well, if I had a choice when I was shopping for my business needs, would I be able to make a choice based on some level of, you know, a sustainability rating, whether it's a green certified product, whether it's a product that is fair trade certified, and, you know, a host of other criteria. So I think we're seeing that consumer sentiment and behavior seep into the business, number one. And number two, on the flip side, we're seeing buying organizations increasingly ask companies such as us, who actually work solely in software, you know, what is your sustainability rating? What is your approach on sustainability policies, carbon practices, net zero emission, and so forth? And so that is an area where I think software companies are really trying to catch up in terms of education of, well, what does that really mean as a software company? Does that mean that when I go to my employee base and I reduce single-use plastics for my employees in the cafeteria, that I'm, quote-unquote, marching towards the path of sustainability? Or is it something a little bit more?
It's really interesting, isn't it? Those two angles, because obviously, you know, running a purchase-to-pay platform, you have an awful lot of transactions going through your software that result in, you know, a buyer-supplier relationship being fulfilled in some way. And for that buyer to hopefully procure more sustainable products and services. And it'll be interesting to come on to talk about certification. But it's a whole different ballgame when they're asking you questions about what you're doing as a software provider. And for me, I always talk about the notion of sustainable supplier and sustainable supply. So sustainable supplier is what are you doing as a software company to you know, to be more sustainable, which frankly, in the sort of carbon footprint and the grand scheme of most of your large customers, that's a very, very small contribution. But nonetheless, you're still being asked to make it. It strikes me that where you're able to make a much bigger contribution is around helping your customers to actually procure more sustainably. But then that starts to get quite difficult and quite complicated, because you're obviously very focused on what you do. You provide software, not necessarily advice for clients around sustainability. Are you allowed to name any of your clients or give us an example of the types of clients that you work with?
I mean, we work, Sean, on a global level today. So we have customers in 20 countries, in large Fortune 1000 organizations that span media, consumer product goods, banking, public sector. Some of the customers that we work with today are NBC Universal, Northrop Grumman, Ashley Furniture Industries. So some really, really big giants. And these customers over the years have increasingly been looking and asking for, well, we are now implementing sustainability policies within our company. How do we make these sustainability policies become alive within the transactional processing world of our day-to-day operations? And how do we give more data to our employees? When we look as a company, specifically Bruzy, we look at employees really as consumers at work. And their decisions and direction making should be rather easy without a lot of overhead.
Yeah.
And so the key is, how do you make that information available in an easy way where they have an informed decision and where they know that that decision is actually leading to a better business outcome? And when you layer in sustainability around that, that is not an easy problem to tackle, because you have to look at the data source of what you're buying, not just from a tier one standpoint with the supply base, but tier two, tier three, even lower. And you also have to really question the accuracy and authenticity of what is being claimed as a green item versus something that's quote unquote not green.
Yeah, it's really tough, isn't it? Because, and this is where, as you know from our previous conversations, we're advocates of ISO 2400, the global standard for sustainable procurement. But when you look at that standard or read any of the summaries of it or listen to the videos or whatever, you're absolutely right. Immediately, it's not that simple. And I think customers that are asking for sustainable product services, whatever it might be, need to understand what they mean when they say sustainable, because for me, sustainability is a contextual thing and customers will have different priorities. I mean, pretty much everybody worries about carbon emissions these days, and that's kind of not going away anytime soon. But other priorities, so, you know, for example, I worked with a client not so long ago in the aerospace and defense sector, and the American Department of Defense was one of their biggest customers. So they had a huge focus on conflict minerals, because clearly you're working for the Department of Defense, the last thing you want is any conflict minerals in your supply chain. And that, as you say, does go down and down and down into tier Z in the supply chain. But that's maybe less of a priority to other organizations. So for instance, recently I was working with an international service provider who are pretty much purely in the business to government space. So they, you know, they empty waste bins, they run hospitals, they run schools, they do prisons, all of that sort of stuff, where the focus there is very much on social value. So if they're running a prison and if they're subcontracting work in prisons, then actually how can you look at reforming prisoners, that, you know, ex-offenders coming into the workplace in their supply chain? And that's something that's really, really key. Now, an organization whose key customer is in the defense sector is probably not going to want that. But those organizations providing social value will. So I feel your pain. It's really tricky. What is your experience? Have you kind of got into looking at certification and verifying sustainability claims at this stage? Is that something that you started to do or plan to do?
I think when we look at ourselves as kind of the software player, and I think earlier to your point, you know, there is this convergence of basically becoming a trusted advisor as well as delivering the software, because you've implemented over the years best business practices into your platform to allow customers to, you know, gain that benefit. And the natural question, you know, to us becomes, well, how are you promoting sustainability within the platform itself? And so these questions now are starting to come out with not only our existing customers, but also their frontline discussions happening during contract negotiations with our customers. You know, CSG, ESG is not going away. It is a continuous and continual education cycle that, quite frankly, a lot of companies such as Bruzy and the customer are figuring out as we go along.
Absolutely. I think we all are. I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm still figuring it out.
And I will say that, look, there are things we work with, some giant shipping and logistics companies, right? And so what is a clear example of kind of a sustainable practice? There is reducing kind of last mile delivery by having depots available very close to your customer, right? When we look at kind of the models in the 1980s with Dell computers, for example, the reason why Dell was so great at their kind of, you know, cutting edge build to order philosophy for computers is that all of their manufacturers in the supply chain were located in Texas. Yeah. And so they could piece together the products very quickly, without a lot of transport costs, without a lot of emissions, and deliver a very good high-end product to the customer quickly, right? And so I think we're seeing that also drive within the actual customer base, where now not only can you order the product, but you can receive it in record time.
Yeah. And that's an expectation now, isn't it? I mean, everybody expects everything to arrive straight away. I think it's really interesting, again, you know, talking about the technology sector. I remember an experience from a few years ago when I was working on the London Olympics, and a tech company that I guess I'd better not name, but they had a policy of changing their supply chain, changing their suppliers every 6 months for every component that went into their computers. And that was entirely cost driven. You know, it was really just to keep competition, and they'd always go for the lowest price for every product and every component for their computers. That doesn't really chime when you start to think about ESG and how you might need to build relationships with suppliers in the longer term. But also, if you're worried about things like ethical employment practices and modern slavery and those type of things, what was happening is somebody might raise a complaint about, you know, slavery work conditions in a factory, but by the time the complaint had been investigated, they'd moved on to another supplier. And it's very difficult to kind of manage some of those impacts if you have this philosophy of changing from supplier to supplier purely in the interest of keeping the cost down. Have you seen any examples of your customers' buying behavior changing the way that they're looking at their supply chains and thinking about them?
I think one of the key trends, I would venture that the example that you just mentioned in terms of kind of this turnstile for, you know, suppliers, we see that more as an exception, obviously, with our customer base, because these customers have built long-term supplier relationships, but they are always looking for new sources of supply.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at the companies that we work with, you know, there's a sector of this purchasing, which is what we call long tail spend, which is basically 20% of your total spend is made up of 80% of your supply base.
Yeah.
And the key area that companies focus on there is not to add to that long tail, but to actually start consolidating that long tail with a smaller supply base. And so when you look at the advent of global electronic marketplaces that are coming out that can provide pharmacy goods and services, that can provide janitorial and sanitation, that can provide a whole host of categories that traditionally were serviced by, you know, specialized vendors. I think you're seeing that consolidation happen. And I think the jury's out as to whether that's a good or bad thing. Right? I mean, you have a lot of small, mid-sized businesses that rely on one or two major contracts with big companies to survive.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
And so keeping that kind of mission in place as a procurement organization is really important. And I think you mentioned something about kind of cost-driven and value-driven. And I think this is kind of that divergence, if you will, between what sustainable procurement versus sustainable purchasing, right? Yeah. Sustainable purchasing is about, let me find the best price, not necessarily focused on product, but best price, and let me get it to, you know, in my doors the quickest way possible. Whereas sustainable procurement is setting an overarching strategy as to how do we achieve certain goals that are important to our business that line with our ethical values and brand. And so when I see the organizations that we work with, I think that there is a tremendous focus on brand management and the actual policies that these, you know, companies associate to their brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly, I mean, we advocate the more strategic approach, clearly. I think it's, you know, as you were saying earlier, people are looking for, you know, a kind of yes, no decision. Is this a sustainable product or isn't it? There is no answer to that question. It's what I would call lazy buying. You know, I just want to box the tick. You know, I'll go out, I'll get the cheapest thing I can get, because that's my job. I just want to tick a box to say, yeah, that's okay. From a sustainability point of view, somebody's checked something out. But unfortunately, as you say, it's kind of not like that. It is about the longer term relationships with the suppliers, and everybody's on this journey. You know, sustainability is not only contextual to different organizations and indeed to different parts of the world, but it's also dynamic because it changes all the time. You know, we started in the UK with the Modern Slavery Act nearly 10 years ago now. Nobody was talking about modern slavery before that. You know, it wasn't really a thing that anybody worried about. Everybody worried about carbon emissions. So, you know, there are kind of always new things that start to come into play. And unfortunately, it does require the buyer to think and to do some research and to really understand what it is they want their suppliers to deliver. And it will be different for different categories of supply. You know, not all suppliers are going to have circular economy products. Not all suppliers need to, because if you're buying services, it's not an issue. If you're buying goods, then some of the labor standards issues may not be as relevant as they are if you're buying services. So there is a big difference in different categories of supply as we start to think about this. Are you, when your customers, again, talk about sustainability, what do they mean? What are the things that they worry about, if you kind of break it down into subtopics?
Well, I think the first question we would receive is, you know, what are some examples of sustainability policies that have been implemented or executed at some of your other customers? So it's more of a discovery aspect, yeah, with customers that might be earlier in, you know, in their journey. The second element that we get is, okay, well, what are you doing about it, Bruzy?
Yeah.
And how do you take whatever you just said and bring that forward within the application? And again, as a software provider, we are constantly looking at internally sustainability practices, doing the right thing, if you will, within our organization. But when you're talking about a remote workforce, largely, and a lot of software companies are now heading that way, there are some major benefits to what's happened over the last 3 years in terms of just emissions, with travel going down and the need for customers to not, you know, have their employees on the road for 2 to 3 hours. But what's the effect of that downstream to the local economy? Well, the effect is extremely negative. The retailers that rely on the customers to actually purchase the coffee or the lunch at the nearby mom and pop shop restaurant, yeah, they go out of business.
Yeah.
Right. And so for us, when we look at, you know, the questions that we receive within the customer base that we work with, it is about, what are the example policies? How do you execute those policies? And what are some of the kind of trends that you're seeing in terms of product stamping and identification that could lead us to make a decision? And then, by the way, what does that KPI do to my business?
Yeah.
That to me is the hardest thing to answer, because we don't have an answer for that. So for example, if I buy a Blue Sign or Green Seal or Fair Trade certified product, what impact will that have to my company outside of having a pat on the back that you bought something green or climate friendly?
Yeah. Yeah, and there has to be a business benefit. Yeah, but ultimately, it is about being a better business. So you're either having some business benefit from that fair trade or FSC or whatever it is product that you have, or you're reducing a risk. And so if, you know, if you're concerned about, you know, investment, about the cost of borrowing, the cost of insurance and all of those things now that are starting to come into play, or if there's some knock-on benefit to your customers and your market share, I guess the other thing that I see, and, you know, from examples of some of the early adopters in this area. So some people like Marks and Spencer in the UK and Patagonia and Unilever to an extent. I think there was a kind, you know, there was a visionary chief executive in amongst all of that that just had the faith. You know, this is the right thing to do. And we know that in the long term, this is going to contribute to the success of our business. So rather than, you know, getting all the spreadsheets out and worrying about what's the return on investment if I buy this or buy that, it's actually we're going to buy the right stuff and we're going to do the right things because we believe it's the right thing to do. Now, unfortunately, Marks and Spencer haven't done all that well in the retail sector. They're still there, but I'm not sure that they've actually kind of positively proved that theory. But there does seem to be some evidence now emerging in academia that businesses that do kind of focus on these issues and have done for a number of years are starting to perform better at a macro level. So I think you're right. At the end of the day, your customers need to understand what benefit they would derive from this. And otherwise, they could end up just burning up a lot of time and indeed cost without really understanding the business benefit. And I know some sustainability purists do criticize me for taking this stance, but I think it's the right thing because if you can't perceive a business benefit, then the chances are you won't do it. And to preach at them and say, you must do this because, you know, it's good for the environment and society is sometimes quite difficult. I was intrigued by your point about remote working as well, because, I mean, I run a medium-sized consultancy business now. We employ 50 people. And like you, you know, in COVID, we had to turn everything over to a virtual environment with people working at home, et cetera. There have been pluses and minuses to that. As you say, it certainly reduces your carbon footprint. It also, you know, helps in terms of efficiency and productivity. We've been able to reach an awful lot more people in the work that we do with the budget that we have. Are you seeing any well-being issues from moving over to a remote working environment? I think what I've seen is some people really love it. You know, they like to work from home. We do still have an office in London, so some people prefer to come to the office. But other people, we've had a few people that are really kind of not coping too well with the isolation and not really, you know, being remote and not feeling part of the team, as it were. What's your experience in that, Shaz?
Yeah, I think you're raising an incredible point that often doesn't get talked about within the lens of, you know, the last 3 years. And, you know, I do believe we as a company have really invested more in seeing each other, okay, as a company base. And so I would say that mental health, wellness is at the top of our list when we look at how to basically take care of our employees and ensure everybody's doing okay. Because the reality is, sitting in your home or your apartment without human touch, and let's just say coding for, you know, a week straight without seeing sunlight is not good in general. Mm. And so,
no, it's not.
You know, what are my roles as a leader in this company is to check in, make sure everybody has everything that they need, but more importantly, that we get out. One of the things that we preach is, regardless of whether we're meeting face to face, we have a corporate wellness program where we subsidize fitness memberships and classes. And we also look at ensuring that when we do outings with our employees, those outings are fun, interactive, collaborative. We live in Los Angeles, so we're fortunate to have decent weather and get the employees out. That's a big, big driver. I do see the next 3 years as Bruzy moving more into a hybrid work space where we actually have employees that would be coming into the office every now and then based on some level of choice in terms of office bookings. But then employees that want to stay home, we would like them to honestly check in with us and come, you know, to our outings, let's say once a month at a minimum. Yeah. So we're flexible, but I will say that I'm probably more of a traditionalist where I say innovation doesn't happen through a Zoom call. Innovation happens with people in a room on a whiteboard, debating spiritedly and coming out with ideas. And that's my philosophy. And so we try to encourage that as much as possible, because that, I think, also has a profound impact on your stimulus as an employee, seeing people, seeing their reactions, you know, breaking bread, if you will. These are incredible drivers for wellness. I will say that the executive groups that I've been meeting have become, I would say, a lot more tolerant and patient over the last 3 or 4 years, as opposed to kind of iron-fisted and demanding in terms of deadlines, which has led to, honestly, more productivity.
Thank you very much, Shaz, for your insights and your views on the challenges. Clearly, we don't have solutions to all these problems, but it's great to be able to talk about them and start to understand how we meet those challenges.
Thank you for listening to our podcast on Sense and Sustainability. Please listen out for more episodes. For more information, learning resources, tools, and much more content on sustainable procurement, go to www.iso2400.org.